Well, in case you haven't noticed, it's been pretty wet lately. How could you not notice? You have a waterproofing problem in your home. You're sure to notice it because it's going to create some problems, or at least it could. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our guest today, Chad Spate and Jaron Zander. Chad owns Chad's Design Build. Jaron is co-owner of Zander Solutions, and they'll be talking with us about a whole host of things. I think we're going to start out talking a bit about waterproofing, and we'll continue that kind of through the show, but we'll also take any other questions you might have about your home, maybe improvement or maintenance issues that you might have. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. Chad Spate, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
And Jaron Zander, thank you so much for tuning in and being with us today.
Thanks, Larry. Appreciate it.
We had a listener contact us to say that he's building a new home and has gotten conflicting advice about whether it's necessary to waterproof the foundation. Jaron, what would you say about that?
Well, I mean, I think having something on the exterior of that foundation wall to help preserve and not get the moisture into that concrete is definitely a bonus versus not doing anything. There are a lot of places around here, like up in the Sauk City area and stuff, that are real sandy.
Yeah.
So they're not seeing a lot of water actually enter the foundation, but you're still getting a lot of moisture content that's still going up against those foundation walls. So by applying something on the exterior of that wall just to keep the water off of the concrete is good advice.
Yeah, concrete's can be porous, isn't it?
And very porous.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, probably the issue is money. How expensive is it? I would think now's the time to do it if you got a new house, but how expensive is it?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, there's different systems depending on where you want to go. I mean, you can obviously go for bare bones, or you can go to a catalog system, kind of like almost anything that you want to do. So there is a budget for everybody, and, yeah. You know, it depends, too, on the soil conditions of what we would recommend. Yeah. To put on those walls.
So it could be a few thousand up to more thousands.
Yeah, I would say our average waterproofing job is probably in that $2,000 to $3,000 range. And,
okay.
And that's a good system.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. And what about someone with an existing home then? What do you need to know about waterproofing that foundation?
Well, they're different because we have obviously existing houses. We have whether it's an old stone limestone foundation wall versus a block foundation versus a poured concrete. So it kind of depends on what type of foundation you actually have will determine on what you need to do to correct any issues that you have.
But it can be done.
Absolutely.
What about from the inside? Is it possible to do anything on the inside?
There are small things that you can do from the inside. For instance, block walls, real tough to waterproof from the inside, as long as doing something with an old limestone foundation, because you're trying to stop pressure from the outside from coming through. But like on a poured foundation wall, we do a lot of injections on areas mm-hmm. like cracks, so
yeah.
we can do that from the inside.
So, and that can help a lot.
Oh, big yes.
Big
yes.
time.
Yes.
Okay. Chad, our listener had a problem because he was given different answers from different builders. Is there some place where you go to get information about the best building practices in any particular area in the state?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, there's certainly some great resources on the internet, and it's a matter of knowing where to go. I'm a big fan of the Build America site and Joe Lisebrick, who's a Canadian building science kind of mm-hmm. best practices expert. If you go onto their website, you're going to learn about all the different systems and how to best approach it, and in different climates and different conditions. And so that's generally my go-to first place.
Okay, what's it again? Give me the.
It's building science.
Building.
And I'm sorry.
You know what? Chris Molina.
We'll get back on that.
We'll get that for us for sure.
Yeah.
He'll find that out, our on-air producer today, and we'll post it up on our Facebook page. That's Larry Mealer.
Yeah, the problem with technology, Larry, is, you know, I just type the first few letters on my browser, and it pops up for me. So,
well, what about finding a contractor, though?
Well, so there are some professional associations which do help in that regard, and also, so if we're talking about waterproofing, I don't know if there's a particular association or place that you might recommend for waterproofing, but I know, you know, if when you're renovating or you're trying to fix problems, NARI is always a good resource, and...
Yeah, National Association of Home Remodeling.
Yeah, National Association of the Remodeling Industry.
That's right.
Yep, and NARI.org is the national site. So,
good place to go.
Yeah, there's really not a organization for waterproofing.
Mm-hmm. So the NARI, I think, is always a good place to go because you can type in an address or a location, and they're going to give you NARI contractors that are in that area.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, Eddie in Madison, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I have a question about moisture issues. So I'm having a moisture issue in my house where I'm getting kind of a musty smell coming from the return vents, and I'm just curious if your guests have any thoughts on what that might be and then what I might be able to do about that.
Okay.
So you definitely can smell the odor coming out of the vents in your heating system.
Yep, and out of the return vents, and it's, you know, it's particularly noticeable on warm, humid days.
Okay. And do you have a central air system?
I do, yep.
Okay. Well, the first step that I would recommend, and perhaps you've already done this, is to have it inspected by a heating air conditioning contractor. Have you done that?
I have not, and that's what I was kind of trying to figure out, sort of the initial steps to take.
Yeah, so generally it's a good idea to have your heating system inspected at least once a year because, of course, the furnace does the lion's share of the work for a home in Wisconsin to keep our homes heated. But then the air conditioning system, too, there are some important drains, some condensate drains, for example, which if those were to get backed up could cause some real problems and might be contributing to this problem. But without inspecting it with a qualified professional, they're certainly going to be able to eliminate the obvious potential malfunctions that could be contributing to that problem. Mm-hmm. The other thing that just happens commonly in a home this time of year, if there's a lot of moisture which is coming into the home through the foundation, and it doesn't have to be running water, it can simply be humidity, water vapor that is passing through saturated cement or masonry foundation parts of the home, that humidity will hit colder surfaces in the basement, and it will condense and start dripping and saturating things. It's not uncommon to see pipes that are dripping in a basement when it's particularly humid. So I don't know if you run a dehumidifier in your basement, but you may end up needing to do that and make sure that's working properly and, you know, either constantly emptying it, or if you're lucky enough to have a floor drain or a standpipe that you can let it drain directly into that. That way that dehumidification will help to, I hope, resolve your problem.
Yeah, there we go. You wonder if it happens in the winter time. If it happens in the winter time, it's you would think that the basement would be drier in the winter, wouldn't you?
Yeah, typically, because you're not having the heat cold.
So if it's something, Eddie, that just came up in the last few months, that your second point there might be a really good one.
Right. And actually, when does it happen? What time of year, or has it happened year round?
Yeah, I mean, you tend to notice it in the summer.
Yeah. Okay.
The winter, I don't notice it too often, or I don't know if I notice it at all.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Good. Thanks a lot for calling, and I hope follow up on those suggestions from Chad, and let's see what happens. Thanks, Eddie. David in Green Bay, it is your turn. Hi, David.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an issue in my girlfriend's basement where we're having moisture come up what seems to be through the basement floor and saturating a carpet in a finished area of the basement.
Ooh.
And so I've had two contractors come through already and kind of take a look at what's going on, and they've given me two fairly different options as to what they could do.
Okay.
And they all seem to revolve around whether or not there is an inside drain tile. I didn't know this before, but apparently there's an inside drain tile and an outside drain tile on a basement.
Correct, David. Yeah, typically with houses, I mean, now more so than how old is the house, I guess. Let me ask you that question, David.
Well, I'm assuming it's around the 70s it was built.
Okay.
60s maybe.
And sure. In Green Bay.
And in Green Bay. Yeah. So typically a lot of older houses did not do a lot of interior drain tile. It started off more so with just exterior drain tile. And then as time progressed through, they started to add interior drain tile into these basements. And now typically it's pretty much inside and outside on everything. But
so she doesn't have a sump in her basement right now, but she does have a floor drain.
Okay.
And we looked inside that floor drain, and there's a clay pipe coming into it from the adjacent basement wall. Does that indicate that there's an interior drain tile, or is that just might be the exterior drain tile?
Well, just a piece of clay. So what I've seen in the past, and we've dealt with a lot of houses that have had clay pipe, whether it's inside or outside, is that clay pipe tends to collapse over time.
Yeah.
So even though you might have that, it might be collapsed. So, you know, listening to you talk about water coming in around the exterior walls of that foundation, I'm guessing it's probably more dominant where the wall and the floor adjoin each other, David?
Yeah, that's okay. My assumption as well.
Yeah.
It's really hard to tell because of the carpeting that was down there,
mm-hmm.
and it just kind of soaked up everything and spread the water out. So.
Yeah. Without obviously seeing it and doing some investigative work, it does sound like you do not have any drain tile on the interior of that house. But because typically, whenever there's an inside drain tile, you have a sump barrel, you have a sump pit for the water to go to it so that you can pump it and get it back outside and away from the house.
Yeah. So, the one contractor thought that clay tile that went into the drain indicated that was interior drain tile, but that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, I would have to probably think that is not inside tile. It could just be just because it's 70s. I don't know what that clay would take water to or from, but you would typically almost always see tile running around with a catch basin of some sort that you could have a pump inside of it. So
yeah.
You know, I had some water. Now, this may not have any effect at all, but I had some water in my basement when I first bought the house that I have right now. Then I extended the downspouts and so that the water ran further away from the house and did a little bit of checking on some low spots near the house and got that grade up a little bit, and that eliminated my problem.
Yeah, grade can definitely be, you know, whether it's downspouts and gutters, you know, making sure the gutters are cleaned out, you know, especially if you have a lot of big trees around your house, making sure all that's cleaned out, flowing well. Grade is pitched away from the house, so you have a positive pitch away from that house so water cannot back towards the foundation walls. Those are all great things.
And a 70s house is going to be probably have sunk a little bit, you'd think, over time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something to look at and to see if that can help with the problem. Sometimes grounds just get so saturated that you do everything right around the foundation, you know, with the grade and the gutters and the downspouts, that it still comes in, and unfortunately. So you know, it's definitely something to look at and to see if that can be improved to help the situation. Yep. So
okay.
All right.
Sounds great. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. My guest today, Chad Spade and Jaron Zander, as we talk about all kinds of things. We're talking a lot about wet basements today and waterproofing, but we're taking all kinds of questions at 1-800-642-1234. When you call, our on-air producer, Chris Molina, will answer with a friendly smile and a friendly voice and get you on the show. Right now, visiting with Chad Spade and Jaron Zander. Chad owns Chad's Design Build. Jaron Zander, co-owner of Zander Solutions. Great to have them along. We'll go right to the phones again. And Ann and Monona, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi. This might not be anything you deal with directly, but what would a person do, or what kind of contractor would one get to remove a front porch from an 1870s farmhouse? There's been water damage, you know, on the roof, and the porch has been pulling away from the house, which is sided. I don't think the porch is original.
Okay. Well, that's a great question. So I think a remodeling contractor like our company is capable of doing something mm-hmm. like that. And so whenever you're tearing something off of a home, you know, there will need to be a demolition permit at a minimum if you intend not to put something there to replace it. But keeping in mind that there's probably a door that leads out to the existing porch, there will need to be something done to make things safe and code compliant once the old porch comes off. And, you know, there are some demolition contractors out there that, depending on the project, might be appropriate for tearing things off safely and cost-effectively, but then you've got to restore the home once that structure is gone in some manner. If it's just patching the siding where the roof used to attach to it, for example. So, you know, you might start by talking to some building contractors who specialize in older homes or in renovating older properties. There could be some historic code issues to be concerned with. Do you know, is the house on the National Historic Register or anything like that?
I don't believe it is, but it's definitely got some really interesting 19th century features.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So those are the sorts of issues that you'd want to be thinking about. And again, I would recommend the National Association of the Remodeling Industry is a good resource for being able to see contractors that would be able to help you, you know, consider options.
I had one more question, too. The soil, this is not in Bain County, but the soil is quite sandy. Would that make a difference in demolition and things like that? And it's also on a hill.
Well, those sorts of issues will, you know, have to be assessed by the contractors that you talk to, certainly. But I don't think that that is likely to be a major issue. Depending on,
I wouldn't think so.
I mean, so for example, whatever footings, if any, that this porch structure has, given that it's 150 years old, you know, unless you wanted to take those out of the ground, often things are taken down to just below grade, and then it can just, you know, the ground can be restored. And again, depending on the equipment that is on site and what you intend to do in that space, you know, some things can just be left in the ground. And
yeah.
I see. Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I remember a couple of years ago when we went in our basement to lower the basement floor 3 feet or so, we dug down and found, I think, the original furnace was buried in the basement floor.
Wow.
Or at least many pieces of it. I saved one. I saved one piece.
That's interesting.
So you never know. Kathy in Janesville, it's your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
What can we do for you? Ah, we lost Kathy. I bet she'll be calling back. Gary in Glidden, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi, hi. I have a wood burner that I heat my cabin with, and I have a leak around the chimney, and but it doesn't always leak. It can be, you know, blowing a real storm, or could be just kind of a light rain, and sometimes it leaks, sometimes it doesn't. I'm wondering what the cause could be.
Yeah.
Is the water dripping out of the actual pipe, or is it around the pipe? I mean, do you see the water inside the home on the pipe, or does it drip into the stove?
No, it drips down onto the top of the stove. And
okay.
Yeah.
Some plastic cups or something around the pipe.
Okay.
I can catch the drips.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that sounds like primarily a flashing problem. Wherever the stovepipe is going out of the roof or out of the home, and I would generally recommend a roofing contractor to help you deal with that. If you are going to try to fix it yourself as a do-it-yourselfer with various caulks, it's going to be important that when you go to purchase those materials, that they are appropriate for this particular application. So not only is it going to, the caulking would need to be compatible with your roofing material, but it also needs to be compatible with that stove pipe with the hot surface. And you know, there are particular materials that if you go to a roofing supply store or just a basic hardware store, home improvement store, that are designed for exactly this sort of fix.
There we go.
Comes out of the roof. It's at, I think it's a triple wall stainless. So I don't know if that heats on the outside or not.
So, you know, the one thing that I will say is that it is possible that the water is getting through the roof deck above where that stovepipe is, and that it has something to do with the way the underlayment of the roofing might not be properly integrated with the flashing. So sometimes the water is actually getting in uphill, and then it's finding its way into your home once it hits that stovepipe. So it might not be easily fixed with flashing and caulking around the pipe, but that would be the first thing I would look at. And then if you have concerns, you just start going uphill from there, and you should be able to find it eventually.
Then just tear the shingles up and maybe look for stain on the plywood roofing material.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
Correct. And then it, you know, waterproofing is always a matter of a combination of utilizing gravity and then having the appropriate materials to keep the water out of the house, or if it's then going to get into the house, we're collecting it and dealing with it in some way. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you very much. Rick.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Thanks, Gary. Appreciate the call. Kathy in Janesville, thanks for calling.
Okay, my question is, we have a 25-year-old house that we built. It has cement block walls, and we don't have a problem with water in our basement, but we're wondering, our dehumidifier says in very humid weather, the lowest level we can get the relative humidity in our basement down to is 65%, and we're wondering if that's good enough or something better is more desirable or achievable.
How old is your dehumidifier?
Just a second. About 4 years old.
Okay. Oh, it's not too old.
It drains straight down so into the pipe system. And
yeah. All right. What do you think, Jaron?
Well, Kathy, I think that there are some things. You said it's block. Do you know if you do have any exterior waterproofing on the house? When you you do have waterproofing on the exterior, so you're still getting all that humidity in. Just out of curiosity, do you have a lot of that foundation sticking out of the ground? Or is it like maybe typical 6 inches or so?
Yeah, about 6 inches.
Okay. Because I was thinking maybe that it could be that we're getting a lot of moisture coming through if it wasn't waterproofed or wasn't insulated from the exterior.
Is 65% pretty high relative humidity for humid weather?
Yeah, 65% is pushing the limits there on what you would want to not have, you know. So, and I'm not a dehumidifier expert by any means, so, but I do know that I think there should be a way to be able to get it lower than 65% in that basement.
You might want to look at the dehumidifier, even though it's only 4 years old, it may not be the capacity too that you need. May not have the dehumidifying capacity. That's probably not the right term, but
where right. would you suggest we look for a better dehumidifier? Any ideas?
Well, so that one thing you could do is actually have a dehumidification system installed into your HVAC system, so that would have a much higher capacity. For removing the moisture. And, you know, this is something that a heating contractor would install. And often they are used in homes that have excessive humidity. But it's also true that if we could figure out a way to get that humidity to lower it from the outside of the home, that would be even better. Because whatever equipment you put in is going to have to work really hard if the foundation is continuing to be wet. And if there were a way that we could reduce that, then that will help you. And so that would involve some of those solutions we talked about earlier, which maybe you've tried and they won't work. But if you can divert water away from the foundation...
There's a percent, I forget what the per foot incline away from the house has to be. I can't remember now off the top of my head.
Well, we're generally shooting for a 4% grade.
Okay, away from the house. Right. And then the downspouts or the pipe going from the downspout needs to be away from the house.
Correct.
And 6 feet or something, anyway.
The further the better, certainly.
So that's something to look at, too.
Kathy, they also do make some products that you can put on that. Is that block wall still exposed? Can you see your actual block, or is it finished off with...
No, we haven't done anything to it. I suggested to my husband that we paint it so it would be more attractive, but that makes him nervous. So.
Yeah. They do make a product called Drylock. I mean, it's something that you can get at a home improvement store. And that's something where you can put that on to help some of that moisture from coming through the walls. It's not going to stop physical water.
Inside of the basement?
Yep. You can paint it on the inside walls, and it definitely does help. So Drylock is what it's called.
Okay.
And I'm guessing if you go on and search it, I'm sure... There's other manufacturers that make products that are similar to that as well, depending on where you live, to what you could, you know, be able to purchase at different home improvement stores. But they do help in that regards to some degree.
How concerned should we be? We don't have any mold or any moisture. We don't see any seepage from the cement block. We don't have mold. Are we probably maintaining it pretty well, or...
So you're not smelling a real musty smell or anything of that in your house like our other caller was having?
No, not at all.
I guess I would refer maybe to Chad too as far as what the actual where relative humidity should be in a basement. We deal a lot with the actual waterproofing per se and the relative humidity. We don't deal a lot with the humidifiers per se. But I'm going to refer to Chad on that relative humidity question.
It's not unusual to have 50% relative humidity in a basement, particularly in the summertime, and it can be hard to get it much below that. And certainly there will be times when it's really wet outside, which we've had in the last few weeks here, where if all the ground is saturated around that foundation, you might not be able to get it below 60 or thereabouts. But having dehumidification that you can see the dial go down a little bit is good, certainly. I mean, if it's 65 when we've had, 3 weeks of dry weather, I would find that to be a little concerning.
Yeah.
No, better in the winter, it's about 50%. One other thing, is there any downside to using the Dry Lock product?
No. Nope, there's no downside that I know of for putting on Dry Lock on those block walls. It's just more for vapor transmission from getting through that block into your basement. So I've never had or read anything about Dry Lock being any detriment to that house or putting it on. So
should be okay.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Yeah, the only thing I would say, because I agree, it's a perfectly acceptable way to reduce the amount of vapor coming in. But if you were looking, say, to finish the basement or something like that, which I know you are not, but if one of our other listeners were thinking about it, Dry Lock will, like any other product, like any other paint or something, if there's a lot of moisture behind it, eventually it'll wear off. You wouldn't want to rely on that as a 20-year solution. Mm-hmm. It's something that you're going to have to keep an eye on and maintain, just like the rest of your home.
Yeah, so there you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Kathy. Appreciate it. Wayne in Eau Claire up next. Hi, Wayne.
Hi. I'm a builder here in Eau Claire and have a neighbor not too far away that wants to tear down their existing house, use the foundation, and add on to it. We had a structural engineer look at the foundation, even though it has some cracks. He said, yeah, it's probably okay, and had the building inspector come, and he said, well, when you tear the house all the way down, you're going to have to demonstrate to me that it has damp proofing outside all the way to the footings. He said, if it isn't, there's somebody that can drive some kind of rod with nozzles down next to the blocks and do it without excavating. Now, he didn't know where to look, and I don't know where to start. Have you ever heard of that? It doesn't sound to me like it would be very effective, but I've got to pursue this for the customer, and
yeah,
pretty soon it's going to be easier to take the whole foundation down, too, I think. But
sure. Yeah, Wayne, they actually do have something that actually you can do that. It's a bentonite product, and it's really expensive. They do a lot of this in the bigger cities where you cannot excavate or you cannot, damage because of historical values and such. So honestly, I would say that you would get a better job and it would be cheaper for you to actually just excavate around that foundation, pressure wash those foundation walls, and then waterproof them if that's what's needed. So,
sure. Okay.
Yeah, it's a bentonite product, and it comes in like a gel form, and it gets pretty spendy to do that. I've seen a lot of stuff on it at trade shows when I go to some of them, and typically it's for tunnels and that kind of stuff in the bigger cities that it's typically used on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
And then he didn't say anything about having vapor barrier under the floor, and I'm thinking, well, that probably might just kill it anyway, because I don't know how we're going to get a vapor barrier on the bottom side of the slab down there. So I'd like to save them the money, but on the other hand, there's just a lot of obstacles to doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you got to excavate it out, and I mean, again, if the foundation's in pretty good shape, depending on the size of that foundation, it might be worth saving that foundation, even if you got to maybe cut a hole through it, and if you do have to pull that floor up to put a vapor barrier under. But, gosh, I would think we could figure something out to do something, especially if that floor is in good shape, to be able to save it and not have to tear a floor out of a basement. So,
yeah. It's two different levels because the house was added on to one. There's a bomb shelter down there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You know, from my standpoint, I'd like to see it go away and they'd have a nice new basement with a new floor and drain tile inside and out. And because they're close to the river, to the Eau Claire River, they're probably only 8-9 feet above that. And if we get some high water, I think that drain tile could take care of a lot of that as it seeps in. It's 50 feet from the river. So we can add on and can't get closer. But okay, well, we'll pursue digging out now that I know it's really expensive.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You were talking about an organization earlier, Chad, and I think it's Building Science Corporation.
Yes, that's it.
That's the name of the, and just to refresh my memory on it, the Building Science Corporation will give you a lot of good information about
best practices for building.
All right, there we go. Chad Spaten, Jaron Zander, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Zeroing in a little on waterproofing strategies, but other things as well, with Chad Spaten of Chad's Design Build and Jaron Zander, co-owner of Zander Solutions. I think we have links to their organizations on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. So love to hear from you, too, with your questions. Lorraine in Dubuque, Iowa has one, so let's go there. Hi, Lorraine.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a water problem.
Okay.
The house is 46 years old. It's brick. The cement was poured by a contractor that the city inspector said we'd never have any problem with the cement itself. We put in an indoor, it's inside drain. We have a sump pump. We've extended the pipes out from the eaves. We've put a dome over the windows. But about a couple of weeks ago, we had about a week of rain here in Dubuque, which finished off on the last day with a very heavy downpour and wind. And when we went and checked our basement, one corner, it looked like the water had seeped up from underneath the floor. So I have no idea what to do.
Yeah.
So, Lorraine, you had said that you do have an inside drain tunnel underneath that floor?
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it goes to the sump pump. We even have some weep holes in one wall that we thought, you know, to prevent any weakening of that wall.
Okay. So. You know, I've seen it numerous times over the years where a house will have inside drain tile and they'll still be getting some pushing up from underneath that floor. And a lot of times what we see is that the footing in either, whether it might be a corner of the basement or maybe underneath where a fireplace is up above, where the footings extend out farther from the actual wall than where it is around the rest of the house. And the drain tile just might be farther away, and it seems odd, but I've seen it numerous times where typically when we run into that scenario, we'll go in there and bust out some of that basement floor right in just that area, let's say the corner, and re-gravel it and fix the drain tile if it is maybe, you know, it doesn't even have to be that far away. It could be, you know, an extra 6 inches away from that footing. For some reason, water will go where it wants to go. And just by busting out a little section of that basement floor, re-graveling it, fixing any kind of drain tile that needs to be fixed, and re-pouring it 99.9% of the time usually takes care of that issue if it's pushing up from underneath in that area.
Well, that's what it seems like, because we thought, you know, we looked for water from the window, but no, it hadn't come down there because the dome took care of that. And it just, like, it's coming up from, I think, underneath. And, you know, it was really a surprise to us because we thought the drainage was good that we had put in.
Sure.
And it's only about maybe 6 to 8 inches away from the wall, so I don't, but we'll take your advice, and our contractor is a friend too, so I think he can take a suggestion and make, you know, some changes, and maybe we get rid of this problem.
Yeah. Absolutely. I wish you the best of luck, Lorraine. Oh,
thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. A couple of houses ago from my, I lived on Lake Monona, and the water table there was, you dug down 4 feet and you were into water on the property. So I had that constant pressure from underneath, and but we were able to take care of it with a sump pump proper getting rid of the water with through that means. Tim and Marquette, or I'm sorry, Tim and Marinette, it's your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm referring to that caller that had the new home about waterproofing his basement.
Yeah.
As a professional builder, I know that the state code actually calls for what they call damp proofing on the foundations. And when we do foundation damp proofing, we used to get like old clothes from like Salvation Army or something, and you get 5 gallon pails of this foundation coating. It's like tar. And then you get a couple guys and you start in one spot, and then you just keep going around the house with rollers. And it's very effective in damp proofing as opposed to like any kind of spray technique. And the old clothes work good because you're going to end up wearing it.
Yeah, my guys use Tyvek spray suits, you know, just a suit that they can put on and take off throughout the day. Yeah, because no matter what you're doing, whether it's a damp proofing or waterproofing or painting or anything, this stuff just doesn't come out of any clothes, you know. So.
But, yeah, I just thought I'd touch base just to, you know, let that owner know that it is actually a state code along with the foam.
Yeah. Yep, there we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. And Bob in Madison has a question. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about roofing. Last time we shingled, we got about 14 or 15 years out of it. Mm-hmm. And I've heard there's some better shingles now that will last longer. And wondering if you know anything about that.
Sure. Hmm. Chad?
Well, I would hesitate to make the claim that the shingles that are out now are definitely going to last longer. What is true is that a lot of the shingles that are being installed now are a multi-layered shingle, which inherently is putting more material up on the roof. The traditional three-tab shingle that we had on most homes for 100 years. Those were essentially one layer of the roofing material, and then, of course, underneath that you have the underlayment that also is your backup waterproofing. I have heard claims that some of the shingles that are out now are going to last longer, but I'm always a little skeptical of those claims because we're not going to know until we've gotten to that point. So... you know, there are a number of other materials other than traditional asphalt shingles that are increasingly available and being used more frequently. I would by no means consider myself a roofing expert, but there are a lot of other things you could look at. My experience as a remodeling contractor is that when we explore these options for our clients, they tend to be significantly more expensive. So, for example, when we look at a metal roofing system, it's going to last 2 to 3 times as long. It can last 100 years if it's maintained, but it's going to cost, you know, 2 to 4 times as much as a traditional asphalt shingled roof. And that roof, you know, you add up the numbers.
And how long you're going to be in the house.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then when you have to think about some of the crazy weather that we have, you know, major damaging hailstorms, you know, on a metal roof, you know, it may last 100 years, but it may not look that great after a major hailstorm. So, you know, these are the sorts of things that I think about, that we talk about with our clients.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I hope that's helpful.
It is. Are those architectural shingles? Are those the ones that you're talking about?
Yes, that's
a little longer.
Yes, thank. Well, so the an architectural style shingle, which essentially gives you a three-dimensional look. Those which are becoming the norm are basically a multiply shingle, and so we're finding that they are more stable because they've got multiple layers that are laminated. So they're not as apt to curl, which is something that we've seen in the one-ply three-tab systems that used to predominate.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Corey in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Corey.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call, gentlemen.
Sure thing.
I have a couple of questions. I have a house that's a ranch that's less than a year old. And I want to finish the garage. The contractor, it's a attached garage, the contractor installed fire-rated drywall on the ceiling. No vapor barrier underneath it. I'd like to blow in insulation up there. Do I need, and it's not going to be heated on a regular basis, maybe once a week, one day a week during the winter months at most, it would actually be heated. But, and I, like I said, I'd like to blow in insulation, and I have questions on if I need a vapor barrier. And I know there's options as far as vapor barrier in paints and different things. I didn't know how effective they are and if I actually needed it. So that would be my main question today.
Okay.
Okay. Yep. It's good questions. I would say that having the vapor barrier in the paint is what I would recommend. And in fact, generally that can be one of the more effective ways to achieve a vapor barrier because that particular vapor barrier will have some permeability to it that we actually want in a wall system. So, had the contractor put up a plastic, a Visqueen vapor barrier, there are a lot of things, other potential problems that you might have, and that's just a very, that product does not allow any vapor transmission. So should there be some moisture up in that attic, you're not going to know about it. So, for example, your awareness of a roof leak or something will be delayed when you have a material like that. And then there are times when we just want a little bit of vapor to be able to get expelled by the building, and one way or the other, depending on how physics is going to take it. And so using the paint is what I would recommend, and that will give you everything that you want for having a comfortable space when you do heat it.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I do have one quick question regarding humidity in the house. I have a carrier system. I have the midline. We upgraded not to their premier series, but the midline, and so I do have dehumidification built right in the furnace unit. And I was just curious on when I could expect the humidity in the house to actually go down. I know it's obviously summer, but if I turn off the AC and open up the windows, even if the humidity is, let's say it's, if the dew point's in the around 50, the humidity in the house immediately just skyrockets. Is it just due to the fact that it's a new house and we need time to get that humidity out, being a new construction, or is there something else I should be looking for or doing, or should I just, keep that keep the AC on? Sometimes the AC doesn't even go on. It's just the dehumidification part of it that works. So.
Well, those are also excellent questions, and it is definitely true that when a home is built for that first year, there are many, many hundreds of gallons of water that are expelled from the various materials that were used to build the home. And so that drying out is going to have to happen, and because we build houses that are much tighter and more comfortable and easier to manage comfort, But that said, you know, we're trapping that moisture in the building, so we've got to pull it out. And so I would recommend that you continue to use that central dehumidification system. And then a couple of years from now, if you're still noticing or thinking that things are more humid than they should be, that's when I would start to be concerned and wonder if something else is going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. Yeah, we've been in the house 6 months, and actually with that system working, we have no issues at all. But it's just when, if I do turn it off, like I said, then it goes up. So I'll continue to use that, and then I'll just watch, you know, just keep an eye on it and watch it over the next year or so, now that we've been in it 6 months. So.
Yeah.
That sounds excellent. Good.
I appreciate your input, gentlemen. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And more callers online, but you can join in, too, if you'd like, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today as we talk home improvement with Chad Spate and Jaron Zander. Chad owns Chad's Design Build. Jaron is co-owner of Zander Solutions. And I think we have links to their operations up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Chris says, yes, we do. So if you want to learn some more about those organizations, just click on our Facebook page. Questions for the guys, give a call at 800-642-1234. The lines are all filled right now. Let's turn to Daniel in Hazelhurst next. Daniel, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. Great show, as always. I have a house that's built 1911, classic colonial revival with a stone foundation. I've owned it for 30 years in Wausau, that is. And when I first moved in, it was a rough basement. It was just the stone, you know, walls, et cetera, and obvious leaking. And what I did over the next few years was to do the mounding around the outside. I think, Larry, you said you did the same for your house, and downspouts, so you got gutters and everything. And it dried up. And I waited a few years, and then I filled in the basement, made it a kind of a really nice man cave, et cetera. And I had 25 years of bliss until last fall when we had those massive rains, and I had water coming in from three corners of the foundation, pretty much. And I'm just wondering, where do I go from here?
Hmm. Yeah, that's a tough one, Daniel, just because now that you said you got it all finished. So typically with old stone foundations, there's kind of two schools of thought. One is to excavate it from the outside. A lot of times when we get in these old stone foundations, you have stones that are different sizes. It's not flat surfaces, you know, whether it's inside or outside. So you start getting into where they put these stones together and they grouted them, and what's typically happening is the grout is now bad.
It's starting powdery in some places.
Exactly. Yeah. And so a lot of times when we get into these and the excavation is required or called for, we get in what's called a shotcrete or a jetcrete guy. And this is basically where they take and they excavate the foundation down to the footings, and then we hire a company to come in and shotcrete or jetcrete, which is a very thick, pasty type of concrete. It's almost like a cement mortar, but thicker. And they will put this on over the top of the stone foundations. So it does a couple things. Number one, it's going to give you a more solid foundation for years to come. But then it will seal up all them cracks and rock joints and mortar joints that you have. And from there, you, since you've already gone through and done all this, you'll waterproof it and insulate it from the exterior. The other option is to, which is kind of not per se waterproofing, but more water management, would be if you had an unfinished area down there, you could put in a bust drain tile in on the inside of that and put a dimple board product, which is basically like a wafer board that you put up against those walls in order to let the water drain down in the inside and go to a drain tile system so it's not getting onto your floor. But it's not, you're still allowing that moisture to come in. It's just, it's a less expensive route to go than actually excavating.
what's been recommended is that I do drain tiles. It only leaks on the south and the east side. The house is on its corner lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it, there's no water at all. There's a drain in the middle. It's kind of the northern third of the basement.
Okay.
And I have not finished that area. It's where I have my laundry room, and it's just a cement floor with a drain, and that's where all the water flows to. But unfortunately, the finished room is on the south end, and I've been told what I need to do is do drain tile on that end.
Yeah. Well, with old stone, I mean, depending on how it got framed up and everything else, even if you put in a drain tile system and you actually bust some of that floor out in some of those finished rooms,
mm-hmm.
you know, that water still could be coming in. And again, you know, I don't know how it's coming in through those walls. Is it just trickling in, or is it a geyser? I mean, I've seen it where water will just physically shoot and hit the insulation on the backside of that wall. And so a drain tile system, just by doing that in itself, might not help you. So there has to be some investigative work, you know, done before, you know, you move forward with one scenario or another on that.
Okay, so it looks like I should. What were you saying that with the jetcrete process?
It's by far the best way, especially if you don't think it's more of a hydrostatic, which meaning from underneath that floor, if you really think it's coming through those walls. The best way that we always take the approach is stop the water from getting into the house.
Mm-hmm.
And that is by doing something from the outside, digging out those walls, basically shotcreting it. You're in Whitewater. We do work in Whitewater, so that's something that we could, you know, definitely look at to help out. But again, it's something where you actually shoot concrete that you put over the top of all the stone foundation walls,
and that sticks to the foundation.
Yeah, there's some. I mean, you got to clean all the loose stuff up. You got to make sure that you don't have, because again, it's about prep. It's just like painting and everything else. You got to make sure that you have a good surface to go onto. So
if the wood is rotten, you don't want to paint over it.
Exactly.
That holes there, I suppose.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
Thank you very very much.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Good luck,
Larry. I was thinking about grout, because I know the grout, if you're grouting the stone foundation, you've got to have grout. You really have to almost use the old grout.
Right. There's an old...
The original kind of where the older grout, because the new stuff just doesn't seem to work very well. That's
right.
Why... Okay. Wonderful. So it's a solution, Daniel, and thanks for calling. Larry in Whitewater, it's your turn. Hi, Larry. Larry, are you there? Oh. Or was that just Larry, who I was dealing with? Let's go to Shelley in Green Bay. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, in my basement, my sump pump died back in February. So I realized that when I had a little water in the basement. Replaced the sump pump. And ever since then, the water seems to be seeping up through the maybe middle of the basement floor, halfway through the basement in the cracks. And I thought once summer would come, it might dry out underneath there, but it doesn't seem to be making a difference. And it keeps coming up through the floor. When it rains, I don't really see water until a couple days later, and then the whole half of the basement is all full of water.
Yeah, Shelley, that's just saturation that you know, that ground gets so saturated and it'll take that water to saturate through the soils and then get down underneath that basement floor. I see it quite often around the lakes around here in Madison, where even though there's drain tile around the perimeters of the house, there still needs to be, we'll call them laterals or grids that actually are cut through the center of the basement floor, just because the ground is so saturated underneath that basement that the water can't get to the exterior of the foundation walls, to the drain tiles, to get to the sump barrel and get pumped out.
Yeah, because it is not coming through. It just starts dripping. You know, it should be flowing for the amount of water that I'm thinking mm-hmm. is under there.
Yeah, so it definitely sounds like, you know, it should be looked at as far as going in there and saw cutting some grid pattern or laterals depending on the size of the basement and where the water is actually coming through by having someone assess it, and then taking those drain tiles and then rerouting those either to the existing drain tile at the perimeter or over to the sump barrel that you already have in place.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
How low is your float on your sump pump? You can lower the float on your sump pump, and that might help. I don't know how.
Actually, I did that. No, it is low, and the water is lower than the drain tile itself.
Oh. Yeah,
I tried everything, but trying to get through the drain tile to see what's going on, I can't fit in there.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like. I mean, they also, we use Roto-Rooter. A lot, or a company like a Roto-Rooter, to come in there, and they have camera systems that they can actually take in the inside of the drain tile and see if there is any clogs in the drain tile, or if it something happened to it and it got damaged during construction that no one knew about. So there are actual ways of doing that to be able to look at the existing drain tile itself and underneath that basement floor.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, actually.
Mm-hmm.
To watch.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for
Good
calling.
Luck.
And that's not too expensive either, as I remember. It's been a long time since I've had that done, but in Monona. But yeah. Jane in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Jane.
Hi there. Say, I have some interest in a property that's got an existing three-stall garage, and I'm wondering. I was thinking about converting it to a cabin. And wondering what the obstacles of doing that would be, and if it's even a good idea.
Okay, well, that's a great question. Typically, a garage is going to just be a slab on grade. So the big obstacle you'll have is that, that building was erected as an outbuilding. It was not the foundation, the slab underneath it was probably not designed to be a heated, occupied dwelling. So that's your biggest obstacle, because while you could do things to improve that building and make it more habitable, you're really going to have trouble overcoming some of the challenges that having a floating slab on grade will present to you. For example, when you want to make that building more comfortable, insulated, heated, tighten it up, if it's moving around with the freeze-thaw cycles, as most outbuildings do on a floating slab, you're going to get distortions in the building, which right now don't matter that much because you're not trying to heat it, and you haven't done things to make it really nice and finished. But once you start investing all that money in it, those sorts of movements might cause you some concern. Or might frustrate you. So as far as code goes, that I'm not entirely sure in the, municipality where you might propose to them that you want to turn this into more of a living space, they might tell you can't do it because of some of these issues. But that I can't speak to, not knowing what the rules are in your particular jurisdiction there.
It has a really steep roof with a bunkhouse up on top and double pane windows all the way around, insulated garage door. So it's built really well. There's no cracks in the slab, and it's all on sand. But you're thinking when you add the element of heat and that freeze thaw could really cause trouble with that slab.
Well, I would say that based on the information you just gave me, perhaps this is a more of an opportunity those issues often are not known until you start living in it. You know, most of us don't spend a lot of time out in the garage, and so, but knowing what you just said, perhaps the building is in such a state that it will not be affected. It would not be the heating of the building itself that would cause any heaving. That would be driven entirely by the exterior conditions, the drainage of the soil, and you know whether or not you're likely to see heaving due to the environmental conditions. So, based on that additional information, the only obstacle might be local code officials having a problem with that becoming a, you know,
residential.
A residential, because it's not that now. I mean, it sounds like there's a loft. Is that like a, kind of an office space, or is it actually kind of an efficiency? Or, I mean, is there water in there?
Well, it's on a river, and that's why I have the interest in the property. And it's like a bunkhouse, so I'm assuming the previous owners built it with the idea that they're going to build a house there.
Okay.
But for me, I would just prefer to use it as a cottage. So it's like 32, I believe, by 26. And it's finished, insulated and finished with knotty pine on the upstairs. No dormers, but there's a window on each side. So it's just a real long bunkhouse, if you will.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And, yeah, the bottom right now is all exposed. It's not insulated, but it's all wired. It's about 10 years old, and there's not a crack in the foundation at all, so... But it is on grade. I mean, there's no slope away except for when you go down the hill to the river.
Right.
But it's all sand. So I'm just kind of wondering, would this be more of a problem than it's worth, or is it a possible opportunity?
Well, it is a possible opportunity. And so some of the other, you know, just to kind of summarize, I'd be concerned about some of the code issues. So I would, if I were you and you're, you know, looking to make some significant investment in this building, I would talk to local code officials to find out what, if any, additional hoops you need to jump through to change the way this building is classified and used.
Yeah.
And then there are some potential steps you might want to take, for example, isolating yourself from that cement slab when you finish the lower level of it. There are some things that can be done to make it more comfortable, and those are things that you'd want to... are you planning to make some of these improvements yourself, or will you be hiring a professional contractor?
I would probably be hired out and do it gradually, you
okay.
know.
Yeah.
I guess...
Okay.
Yeah, I guess my idea would be to sort of get water up there and kind of camp and improve as I go, you know.
Mm, sure.
One at a time.
Yep, gotcha.
Well, good luck. It sounds like an interesting project.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Mary emailed us, and we have they have a house that's pretty tight, I guess. At least they've been told that. It's very tight. And when it gets cold outside, they get... ice on their windows and mold even, wondering about suggestions for getting rid of the mold and eliminating the condensation on the windows.
Sure. So with a really tight home, I mean, it's all about air exchange. And, you know, in the old leaky homes, like the fresh air just came in around every window, door, and at the sill, and you name it. It comes in everywhere. And so in the wintertime, that cold air is really dry air. And now what you need to do is install some systems, mechanical systems, that will bring in that cooler air in a controlled manner, often with a heat recovery ventilator or ERV, energy recovery ventilator, which is going to bring in that cold air, preheat it a bit with exhaust through a heat exchanger, and then provide you with some dehumidification through that. And then a whole house dehumidifier is another approach that we sometimes use.
Mm-hmm. Air-to-air heat exchanger is the old term that they used to use for that, and I always thought it was a better description.
That's true. It is a good way to describe that, definitely.
Jerry in Wisconsin Rapids, do you have a quick question for us?
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Larry, thank you for a wonderful program once again. Two quick questions on new construction of a small home. I'm considering using these insulated basement blocks to pour the basement foundation. Fox Blocks would be one of the brand names, and I'd like your guest opinion on that system. And also, I'd like to build in some storm and wind protection by actually continuing the anchor bolts from the basement foundation with connectors up through the walls, tying in the top plate, and potentially up into the roof structure. And I'm wondering if they have an opinion on that as well.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, so as a remodeling contractor, I've always been intrigued by these forms, but we haven't had the opportunity to use them because they tend to be better suited for an entire building, new construction. The one thing, interestingly, that I've always been concerned about with those systems is proper waterproofing of them. So I know that you might speak to that, Jerem. But I, you know, certainly tying them all together, it's what you're thinking about doing with respect to the bolts and strapping. Increasingly, we're having to do that with the wind shear code. So I would encourage you to go the extra mile with those systems.
Yeah. Jerem, any comment, Jerem?
Yeah, I mean, there was a while back when they were kind of more popular, and I haven't seen a lot of it in the last few years. But when you think about it, you got insulation, and your key to losing a lot of your heat loss is through that foundation on the top 4 feet. So having all that insulation on those walls is great. The one thing that concerns us when we waterproof is you cannot see the concrete and the condition that concrete is in, because it's surrounded by styrofoam blocks. And so one thing that I would say is to make sure that whoever is pouring the concrete inside of those is doing a very good job of vibrating that concrete to make sure that you're getting good compaction, because what you don't want to see is what we call honeycombing, where it's not all together and a solid surface. So from there there are products to waterproof over styrofoam that can be done. And so that's my main concern with those, is to make sure it's vibrated real good.
There we go. Thanks so much for calling, Jerry, and thanks to everybody who called in. Jenny, I'm sorry we didn't get to you today, but that's how it works. And I want to thank our guests as well, of course. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build works out of Monona, Madison. Yep. Jerem Zander with Zander Solutions, co-owner, and you guys work all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So especially, I know they got projects in Milwaukee and Madison and all over. So you can go to their sites. We have it up. We have them up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show if you want to learn some more about them.